The first time Mira saw Arian, she was sitting in the aft corner of the university library, half lost in the runners of a novel, a quiet presence, a shadow indeed, settled in the seat across from her. She looked up, and there he was. His eyes were the kind that didn't just look at you, they saw you, deep, dark, and quiet, like a memory you couldn't relatively place. He gave her a brief, polite nod. No words. No smile. Just presence. Mira didn't believe in instant connections. Love at first sight was a romantic myth for people who wanted to escape the gray of everyday life. But Kamadi about Arian made the air hum else. She couldn't explain it, and that frustrated her further than anything. Over the coming many weeks, she kept seeing him. In the library, on the gravestone benches near the music hall, sitting under the old banyan tree that stood like a wise guard in the middle of lot, always reading, always alone, always looking like he carried stories in his bones. One stormy autumn, she eventually approached him. "You always read the same book," she said, seesawing toward the leather-bound journal in his hand. "Do ain't you ever get tired of it?" He looked up, slightly startled. Also his lips twisted, not a full smile, but enough to soften the shadow in his eyes. "It's not a book," he said. "It's mine. Yours." He turned it toward her, pages filled with thick handwriting, poetry scribbled between perimeters, faded essay where words have been written and rewritten. "It's my journal," he explained. "I collect effects. Stories. Studies. Memories." Mira blinked. "You read your recollections?" "Occasionally you have to," he said, "to flash back who you are." That strange answer only intrigued her more. Their exchanges started from there, still blooming in the spaces between silence. He told her about the stars and the way certain dreams leave fingerprints on your day. She told him about her Mama S Theater and how every flower had a story. But he no way told her where he was from. Not really. All she knew was that he transferred to university suddenly. That no bone knew much about him. That he no way spoke of family or nonage or motherlands. And yet, Mira set up herself drawn in. She didn't need the answers. Not yet. Their fellowship grew sluggishly, like moonlight on still water, gentle, reflective, ineluctable. She started noticing the way his fritters tapped to an unnoticeable meter when he allowed. The way he broke before laughing, as if he'd decide whether joy was safe. Also, one night, everything changed. It was the periodic lantern jubilee on lot. Scholars lit paper lanterns and released them into the sky, each carrying a want. Mira stood with Arian at the edge of the lake, lantern in hand. "What will you wish for?" she asked. He goggled at the glowing paper between his fritters. "That depends on if wishes can bring back the dead," she said. "Arian," he looked at her also, and there was no wimpiness in his eyes, just anguish, old and concave. "I had a binary family," he said, voice low. "Aaron, he failed 2 times gone. Auto accident. I was driving." Myra's breath caught. "I still see him," Arian continued. "In dreams. In glasses. Occasionally I wonder if I'm the bone who failed, and he's the bone who lived." She reached for his hand. "That's not true." "I don't know what's true presently," he rumored. "Occasionally I feel like I'm just the shadow that was left before." The lantern slipped from his hands and floated into the sky, a flicker of gold against the black. Mira didn't let go of him. Not that night. Not later. The further she learned about him, the further she understood the weight he carried. Arian was then cold. He was grieving. And grief had a way of erecting walls so grandly. Indeed, like it and find a way in. But she was then hysterical of murk, because occasionally they were only the evidence that light had formerly existed. After the lantern jubilee, commodities shifted between them, not in words or gestures, but in how they participated space. Arian began to let her in. He showed her the rooftop above the old wisdom structure, where he went when the world felt too heavy. They lay there lateral by side under a mask of stars, their shoulders nearly touching, silence stretching comfortably between them. "It's the only place that doesn't ask anything of me," he muttered one night. "You can always come to me too," Mira said. "I do not ask anything. Just that you let me stay." He turned to her, his face silhouetted by starlight. That's asking further than you realize. Still, she stayed. They fell into a meter. Coffee on chilly mornings. Walked between classes. The way he touched her shoulder smoothly when she laughed too hard. How she'd look up from her book and find him formally watching her with commodity implied in his eyes. And yet, indeed, as closeness grew, the murk didn't entirely leave Arian. Some days he'd vanish, not answering textbooks, not showing up to lectures. When he returned, his eyes would be distant, his smile sick. "I get lost in my head," he said formally. "Occasionally it takes time to find a way out." Mira understood. Everyone carried ghosts. Hers just didn't walk as close as his did. Still, she wanted to know all of him. The boy he'd been, the man he was trying to be. But every time she tried to ask more, he'd retreat behind his quiet smile. Until the day she followed him, it was unplanned. He left the library suddenly, leaving his journal before. She seized it artificially and ran after him, calling his name, but he didn't hear, or he didn't want to. She watched from a distance as he boarded machine to the megacity outskirts. An hour latterly, he stood before a modest house with cracked shutters and wild ivy crawling up the veranda rails. A woman opened the door. Pale, frail, her face lit up the moment she saw him. "Mama," he said, and indeed from where Mira stood, she heard the earthquake in his voice. He stayed only 10 twinkles. When he left, he walked sluggishly, shoulders hunkered, like he progressed times in those many twinkles. Mira didn't call out. She didn't want to intrude on commodity, so private, but she understood further now. That night, she returned his journal to him in silence. He took it, eyes dark and searching. "You followed me." "I didn't mean to." "You left this behind." He jounced. "You saw her?" "Yes." Arian sat down on the lot bench, fritters tensing around the journal. "She doesn't flashback me. Not presently. Beforehand, onset madness. She thinks I'm Aaron." Mira sat beside him. "She calls me his name," he rumored, "and I let her, because if it makes her smile, what does it count who I am?" She felt her casket strain. "It matters to me." He looked at her also, like someone skimming through a crack in the door after times of darkness. "I'm not whole," he said. "I'm sutured together with guilt and silence. Loving me would be like loving a shadow." She touched his hand. "Also, I'll come to light that makes it." He didn't say anything, but he didn't pull down. The seasons shifted. Leaves turned gold, also brown, and the sky grew colder. Their bond strengthened in the quietest of ways. One day, as downtime crept by, Mira brought him to her favorite place, her father's old art plant. Sun streamed through altitudinous windows, catching dust in its golden gleam. The room smelled of turpentine and old paper, the walls filled with half-finished oils. "My father used to paint people he loved," she said. "He said every face had a story. Indeed, the sad bones." Arian walked to an oil near the corner, a girl with stormy eyes and wind, tossed hair, looking directly at the bystander as if she were about to speak. "Is this you?" Mira jounced. "He painted it the summer before he failed." There was silence for a long time. "Also," Arian spoke vocally, "he saw you." She met his aspect. "And I see you." The air between them whistled with implied effects. Commodity fragile. Commodity on the verge of getting more. That night he kissed her. It was ent perfect. It was ent rehearsed. It was slow, uncertain, nearly like a question. But she answered with her lips and the way her hands framed his face, as if he were commodity precious. Because to her, he was. Still, love didn't abolish pain. And when Tess approached and the stress of life returned, so did Arian's murk. This time, they swallowed him whole. He stopped answering. Stopped showing up. It was as if he dissolved into the cold December wind. Mira searched for him. Rooftops, benches, banyan trees. Nothing. Until one evening, a communication arrived in her inbox. A single line. "I'm sorry. I'm not strong enough to stay." Mira goggled at the communication for a long time, her breath stuck nearly between her lungs and her heart. It was an a farewell. It was a quiet unraveling. A sinking. A drowning. She tried calling, messaging. Indeed visited his dorm. Empty. Cleared out. It felt like he'd know where he was, except for the journal he left before in her hands. Placed inside her mailbox one morning like a ghost's final immolation. Inside were runes. Letters. Memories etched in looping script. The last runner held a note written just for her. To Mira, still, I would have told you sooner, if I were stalwart enough, that I love you, that you were the first light I saw after the dark swallowed me whole. But love, I've learned, is then always enough to keep someone standing when they're falling from within. Do and stay for me. But if someday you still see the shadow in your eyes, know that it formerly belonged to a boy who loved you further than he loved himself. Arian, she read the letter until it blurred. Until the essay looked like it was crying too. For months, Mira waited. Not laboriously. Not foolishly. But with stopgap put away into the corners of her heart. She still visited the rooftop. Still walked past the library table where he formerly sat. Still lit a lantern every time and rumored his name into the wind. Time passed. As it does. She graduated. Took a job at a publishing house. Moved to a quiet apartment where her books lined every shelf and the sky browsed through her curtains like a shy caller. But some nights, when the world was still, she'd read his journal. His studies. His injuries. His love. And she'd brute back, "I saw you too." Three times latterly, it was an ordinary autumn when she saw him again. She was walking through a secondary bookstore on the edge of the megacity, searching for old poetry collections. A man stood by the gospel section, altitudinous, quiet, flipping through a survived dupe of Rilke. She honored the pitch of his shoulders first, also the stillness of him, like someone suspended in time. "Arian?" He turned, and it was him, aged, thinner, a faint scar on his tabernacle. But those eyes still deep, still shadowed, still beautiful, lit up when they met hers. "Mira." It was then a reunion of dramatic embraces or cried allegations. Just two people gaping, flashing back, breathing the history and the present each it formerly. "I didn't suppose I'd ever see you again," she said still. "I didn't suppose I merited to." Her voice quivered. "Why now?" "I've been in remedy," he said, honest as ever. "Got a job at Academy Hard. I've been trying to make commodity new. But every part of me still flash back you." She blinked snappily, fighting gashes. "You left me?" "I know, and I remorse it every day of my life. But I had to heal, Mira. I couldn't love you while abhorring myself." She looked at him also, not just a man before her, but the boy she formerly knew, the broken soul who had tried so hard to carry the weight of family's death. A mama's fading memory, and a belief that he didn't earn happiness. And yet, then he was still standing, still carrying murk, but no longer letting them consume him. He pulled commodity from his bag. Her heart stopped when she saw it. His journal. "I've been writing again," he said. "But this time, the runners are full of light." She smiled, gashes slipping freely now. They sat together on a worn settee in the reverse of the store, sun warming their faces through fine windows. They talked, not just of pain, but of dreams, of mending, of love not lost, but broke. And when the silence settled, Arian reached for her hand. "I still love you, Mira," he said simply. She didn't vacillate. "I know way stopped." And in that quiet little bookstore, girdled by the stories of non-natives, two souls who had formerly drifted piecemeal began writing a new chapter, together, no longer murk. Just light. The rain had just started to fall when Arjun spotted her. He stood under the ancient banyan tree at the edge of the old tabernacle yard, the scent of wet earth rising around him, a light mizzle dance on the rooftops of the small city of Daripur, painting the thoroughfares with shimmer. The periodic thunderstorm jubilee was in full swing, with booths buzzing, horse laugh echoing, and lanterns glowing vocally in the darkening light. And that's when he saw her. She moved like a dream, her way careful, graceful, her blue sari flowing around her like a tail of the ocean. The fabric cleaved her gently in the mizzle, exaggerated with tableware vestments that sparkled every time she passed beneath a lantern's gleam. Her long black hair was partial projected, half free, like she couldn't decide between control and abandon. Arjun forgot to breathe. He was a shooter, visiting Darepur on assignment to cover the Thunderstorm Jubilee for a trip magazine. But no image he'd ever captured compared to the moment she walked into the forecourt. The lens of his camera remained untouched. He didn't want to see her through glass. She stopped at a cube dealing hand-woven lavaliers, and he set up himself moving closer without realizing it. The soft sound of her hoarse laugh, the way she lifted her head when she spoke to the old woman. At the cube, it was poetry in stir. He'd to know her name. But Arjun wasn't someone who believed in grand gestures or foolish frippery. He watched from a distance, hoping for a sign, commodity, anything, that might invite him into her world. And fate, it sounded, was hearkening. A strong gust of wind swept through the forecourt, lifting the edge of her sari into the air. In a nippy stir, she turned, clinging to Palu, and in doing so, her eyes met his. Dark, curious, surprised. Arjun smiled artificially, though his heart was contending. She blinked formally, also again, and also she smiled back, vocally, hesitantly. That was enough. He walked toward her, trying to undergird his breath. The sound of the jubilee faded, as if the world had narrowed to just the two of them. "Hi," he said, stopping a regardful distance down. "I'm Arjun. I suppose the wind just introduced us." She laughed. A real laugh this time, warm and lyrical. "I guess it did," she said. "I'm Mira." "Mira," he repeated. As if the name was a verse, he didn't want to forget. They stood under the ceiling of the lavalier cube, rain trickling off the roof beside them. "You're not from around then," she said, noting his megacity clothes and camera bag. "No, I'm from Mumbai. I'm then to snap the jubilee. And, well, easily fortune had other plans." She raised an eyebrow, regaled. "Do you use that line on everyone you snap?" He laughed. "No, just the bones who look like they stepped out of a thunderstorm love story." She flushed slightly, and Arjun wanted to frame that moment ever. They talked for many twinkles, about the jubilee, the food booze, the unforeseen rain, and before he could overthink it, he asked, "Would you like to walk with me? I haven't had a companion yet." She dithered only an alternate before seesawing. "Sure, but only if you let me steal one of those road samosas on the way." He beamed. "Deal." They rambled to the narrow thoroughfares of Darepur, beneath rows of fluttering unheroic lights and old complexion rooftops. Arjun took prints when she wasn't looking, of her holding sugarcane juice, of her turning to smile as a child threw flower petals into the air. The rain kept falling, light and gentle, a soft meter to their way. And Mira, in her blue sari, looked like a personification of the thunderstorm itself, mysterious, radiant, transitory. They stopped at a small tea cube, the kind with benches under a new drum roof. As they belted storming chai, the silence between them grew comfortable, intimate. "So," Mira asked, setting her mug down, "how long are you in city?"
3 further days," he replied.
"Unless commodity makes me stay longer." Her eyes dallied on his. "And have you set up commodity worth staying for?" He didn't answer right down. Rather, he looked at her, learning the wind of her smile and the shimmer of drops on her shoulder. "I might have," he said still. And just like that, the moment changed. The wind stilled. The rain broke. Indeed, the lights sounded to hold their breath. They didn't kiss. Not yet. But it felt like the air had shifted, like the world had leaned in near to hear. Latterly that night, after they parted under the banyan tree with pledges to meet again the coming day, Arjun sat alone in his guesthouse room. He reviewed the prints he'd taken, and every frame of Mira, laughing, walking, belting chai, glowed like it held a secret. He couldn't sleep. His studies were full of her. Mira, in a blue sari. A woman he'd met in the rain. A woman he was beginning to fall for. The coming morning. The rain had left behind a newness that wrapped Darepur in a gentle hush. The thoroughfares, still wet, lustered in the soft morning sun, and the scent of blooming jasmine dallied in the air. Arjun arrived at the Tabernacle Square beforehand. He didn't know if she'd come. Their pledge to meet had been casual, implied, really,
just a smile, a hopeful regard, but he cleaved to it like it was the only verity he knew. And also she appeared, wearing a different sari this time, cream with a faint gold border, but still graceful, still stirring. Her eyes set up him incontinently, as if she, too, had been searching. "You're beforehand," she said, approaching. "I didn't sleep much," he replied. "Had a feeling moment might be important." She smiled, her eyes crinkling at the corners. "That sounds dangerously romantic." "Perhaps it is." They walked again, this time toward the swash that ran along the edge of city. It had swelled slightly from the rains, the water brown and fast moving, but the banks were peaceful, shadowed by neem and gulmohar trees. They sat on an old gravestone ledge overlooking the swash, their legs swinging over the side. "Tell me commodity you haven't told anyone," she said suddenly. Arjun glanced at her, surprised. "That's quite a request." She looked at him sideways. "Too soon." "No," he said, allowing, "just unanticipated." He took a breath. "I've no way shown anyone the prints I take just for myself. Not for work, not for guests. Just the bones I capture when I'm feeling commodity I see a and put into words." "Why not?" "Because they feel like pieces of me. And perhaps I'm spooked that no bone will see what I see." Mira was quiet for a moment, also said, "I'd like to see them eventually." He turned to her. "I'd like that." She lifted her head. "Your turn." He beamed. "All right. Tell me commodity you've no way told anyone." She dithered. "Occasionally I dream of leaving all this before. The city, the prospects. Everyone thinks I'm happy then, and I am, substantially. But part of me wants further. A bigger life. A louder sky." "A louder sky," he echoed. "That's beautiful." They sat in silence, letting the wind speak for a while. Also, vocally, Mira asked, "What happens when you leave?"